Welcome to MGO Radio 3.0. Wow, that's echoey. We are having our football eve, hosted, of course, by Home Sure Lending. We are at 327 East Hoover, the old Purchase Radio Supply Building. We've got free beer, free barbecue. We're going to be here until about 10. Well, some people are going to be here. I still have work to do, unlike the rest of you. But it's,
really? You've been working this week?
I have been. It's really football eve eve. This is bothering me. I'm very tired.
I can tell.
We were talking earlier, and I was like, did we do one of these last year? And everybody was like, yes. You called John Eubacon Dave Brandon. And now I do remember yes. that. I will not remember anything that I'm about to say.
Yeah, I get that sense.
Until next year. Before we kick it off, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Underground Printing, The Bow Store, Home Sure Lending, The Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Lantana Hummus, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Peak Wealth Management, and Michigan Law Grad. So, the season is upon us. I have completed all of the positional previews on the site, and in the process of actually doing this, you kind of have your expectations ramp up and down based on all the data that you're collecting. You've read them, you've looked at the yep. schedule stuff, so we're just going to talk about kind of how our opinions changed about what is coming up for us this season. I thought we'd start with the up arrows, because that's fun. What's your biggest up arrow?
I would say I think just safety and the fact that it's really there hasn't been any sort of word that any of the starters have lost ground.
Yeah.
Because if there had been word, that would be tremendously concerning. I really like Jordan Glasgow. I don't know if I'd be comfortable with him playing a deep safety spot. So the fact that the starters seem to be very entrenched and there hasn't really been any discussion. We haven't heard any serious concerns about the play on the back end of the secondary.
No, I mean, it does. There is kind of this starter by default
sure.
aspect to it, maybe a little bit. But the things that they've been saying about the safeties have been very positive.
The quotes have been very encouraging, and they don't come off as that, like, we're saying nice things because we're trying to pump you up sort of a thing.
Right,
it sounds like something that they don't have to say this, but they're saying it because they're comfortable with it.
Because other folks in the secondary have not been afforded
they have
that
not treatment. Received such praise.
One of my biggest up arrows is the 24/7 Steve Lorenz's offensive line Ewing theory,
mm-hmm.
where Michigan loses three starters, and that's usually a very bad thing for your offensive line. But after I went over the Florida State game, I went over the Ohio State game, and I looked back at all the UFR stuff, and I looked at the final end of year Pro Football Focus rankings, and Ben Bredesen was -5 on the season. I was like, oh well, that's bad because it's minus. He's a true freshman, and both Braden and Kalis were ranked below him by a pretty significant margin, and I thought that was fair. I looked at all my grades and stuff, and I was like, that's pretty much my opinion as well. So you replace those two guys with Patrick Kugler and Mike Onwenu, both guys who are, well, they're totally different guys. One's a fifth-year senior who's just now breaking through. Probably doesn't have a high ceiling, but he's going to know everything he needs to know about where he's supposed to be, which was a problem for some of these guys. And then Onwenu is a huge upside road grader. So I'm relatively more down on right tackle than I was when I started this process.
Mm-hmm.
But as a whole, I think that the offensive line is going to feel better. Especially because Bredesen is another one of my up arrows.
Yeah.
So he was -5 on the season. That's bad. But we also looked at a couple of the competitors.
Coy Cronk, Michael Jordan.
Coy Cronk, both four-star freshmen starting for Indiana and Ohio State. Cronk was -25.
And that wasn't even by the end of the season.
Yeah, and by the end of the regular season, Jordan was -16. So relative to the other four-star freshmen who were starting on the offensive line in the league last year, Bredesen was a cut above.
Yeah,
he's also locked down that left guard job. There's been no challenge. It's just been Mason Cole and Bredesen as your left side, and that's been ever since the season ended. That's been the expectation. They've fulfilled that. So I'm expecting a big leap forward from him, even more so than I would kind of in a normal true freshman to sophomore transition. What's your biggest downer?
Well, I've got another up curveball for you, actually, because you, I think we're in disagreement on this. I'm actually slightly more encouraged by right tackle than I was heading in.
Really?
For a couple reasons. I'm relieved that Ulizio won the job over Runyon because he's so much more tackle-shaped. And especially when, like, I was just looking at Runyon as basically a more average version of Mason Cole, where he's shaped like an interior lineman.
Yeah.
He's athletic. You can kind of do some stuff out on the edge, but elite pass rushers are probably going to get him.
Yeah.
And you're not sure how big of a plus he's going to be in the power run game. Ulizio, we heard some things about him that explain why he hadn't really emerged before now. He went through about a mono that cut down his weight significantly. He's back up to into the, like the 290, 295 range that you want your tackle to be at. So, and that I've found encouraging that Ulizio beat out Runyon and that they did not think to kick Bradison out to tackle and insert Cesar Ruiz into the lineup, which I would assume is kind of the break glass in case of emergency option.
Yeah.
I'm setting a low bar here, but I was pleased that that didn't come to pass.
I was still just down on it because we heard about Runyon and we're kind of skeptical about that. And then it comes out in an MLive article that he missed 3 months of the summer with an injury, which he like absolutely could not afford to take those that time off. And you see people are talking about Bushel Beatty, and then Ulizio makes a really, really late run, and the whole vibe around it is
no, the JBB talk happened last year, and then things turned out fine, relatively. It would have turned out fine if Newsom didn't get hurt.
I
don't know if maybe they're just still talking him up so he doesn't transfer.
Job by default, guy coming out of nowhere, has an explanation to why that might be the case.
Yeah.
But still, just a total wild card. I feel bad about it.
Yeah, I'm still not feeling settled about it. I'm feeling slightly less unsettled.
Okay, so you've been optimistic. Now, hit it.
Cornerback. I'm worried. I mean, the recent quotes about LeVert Hill have been encouraging, but the fact that David Long didn't just grab that job and run away with it, considering his primary competition is Brandon Watson right now.
Yeah.
That's worrisome because Watson seems relatively limited, kind of a press man specialist who, I don't know, seems to fit best as a guy you throw in at nickel every once in a while.
Well, I mean, he played at nickel and he played off and then he like tackle on a slant. And it's just, he didn't get many snaps last year. He was like -3 to Pro Football Focus. And he's a 3-star at a position where athleticism is everything, and it's really easy to judge that athleticism. So feels like he has a low upside. And if Long is really getting called out, still battling for a job this deep into camp, that's I didn't put that one down, but I definitely should have. I'm higher on Grant Perry than I was because I went over the Ohio State game, and Michigan anticipated that Ohio State would be overplaying Jake Butt. They overplayed Jake Butt, and Michigan repeatedly found Grant Perry open in one-on-one coverage for 3, 4, 5 conversions. He was open. He made all the catches that he possibly could. And he's a guy who I think is going to have something approximating a breakout season. Of course, the complicating factor there is
there are so many wide receivers.
Like you could have, I don't know, 6, 7 different guys have 20 catches, and then how does anyone get actually up to like 60, 70. I don't think that's going to happen.
I think we'll see a lot of guys having 20-ish catch seasons, but Perry seems like he'll be their like reliable third down guy and someone, especially when they spread the field, trying to cover that guy one-on-one is difficult.
Especially because you've got so many freshmen. He's a junior. He's been around the block.
You know he's going to run the right route.
Right, and he's going to be in the right spot at the right time, and that's not something that you're going to be able to say about a lot of the other receivers, especially in the first half of the year.
Sure.
So I think Grant Perry and the slot in general is something that has really come up because you've got Nate Shanley, you've got Maddie McDoom, and each of those guys has kind of their role. My other downer is backup linebacker.
Mm.
So you've got Bush, you've got Kalik Hudson, you've got Mike McCray. You don't really have anyone behind them who it seems anyone's particularly comfortable with.
Yeah, Robo's a walk-on.
Didn't really push for the job. It doesn't seem like he's going to be one of those Glasgow types. He's a guy who was described to us as an A-gap player.
Yeah, which makes you worried if he's in there against a spread team.
Right, so he's going to be Desmond Morgan-ish, right, if he does get in. And that's kind of your best-case scenario. Yeah. Not an ideal fit for a Don Brown defense, not an ideal fit for modern football. And you're not really seeing any talk about Gill or Mbembase.
No, those those second-year linebackers have really not made any noise.
And even the freshmen, like, you're hearing a little bit about Josh Ross, not really much about Singleton, not really much about Jordan Anthony. So,
and those guys had extenuating circumstances, but, you know.
You'd like to hear a little something.
Yeah, Singleton's coming off the ACL. Anthony just bounced around a lot in high school.
Yeah, he played running back as a junior, that kind of thing. I just, if one of the starters goes down, that's going to be trouble.
Yeah.
And the other backup situation that I was pretty scared by was safety.
Sure, yeah.
So we mentioned this just now. Like, the backup for Tyreek Kinnell is a true freshman, Jamarik Woods, who we'll talk about a little bit more later. and the backup for probably both the Viper and strong safety is Jordan Glasgow.
Yeah.
And Jordan Glasgow looked pretty good in the spring game. We've been hearing that when he goes up against guys like Donovan Peoples-Jones, it doesn't go very well.
There's an athleticism gap there.
And that's another one of those things with, like, Watson, where he's a walk-on probably for a reason, and that's a very, like, athleticism-focused position, especially in a Don Brown defense that's going to ask you to run a lot of man.
Yeah, it's tough to compare Jordan to the other Glasgows because those guys were enormous linemen, and that's something
right.
where you can break through as a walk-on on a more consistent basis.
Yeah. So the back seven, like, just getting to anyone except the starter is kind of a...
Yeah, health is going to be
deal.
Paramount
yeah.
for that defense.
I mean, the good news is if you look at the starting lineup in this defense, I've only got, like, that one cornerback slot is pretty much the only question mark I have. Everything else looks really, really good.
Yeah.
Or at least should be decent.
Yeah, like, Devin Bush seems like he'll be a great fit in this defense and rack up some numbers.
Right, and Cannell's going to be fine, and Metellus is tracking well, and all of that looks good. The kind of holes that you used to see in old Michigan teams where they're, like, throwing out James Rogers as a starting cornerback,
mm-hmm.
I don't think there's anything on this roster like that except maybe right tackle. And even there, they had five options, and they were sorting through them, and they seem to have found a guy that they like. So I this is a team that lost almost everything, and they have those two really small hope classes at the top of the roster right now.
And if you're wondering what's killing depth,
that's what I mean, because Hoke took, I think, 31 guys in two years.
And not all of them hit.
Yeah, and Peppers is already gone from one of those classes. A bunch of guys have washed out. So that's good news for next year when Michigan loses basically Mo Hurst and Mason Cole and nothing else.
Yes.
But for depth this year, if you're getting past the starting lineup, especially on defense, you are pretty much immediately hitting freshmen.
Yeah, you're hoping some talented freshmen grow up very quickly.
Some of them are redshirt freshmen, so that's a little bit less worrying, but this is not a situation where Michigan has something like they had last year where they had so many defensive linemen that if one of them went down like Monet did, it was like whatever.
Yeah.
It was a situation very, very different. And my last like up arrow was actually Brian Monet.
Nice.
Because I went over, I think everybody remembers that 3rd-and-1 that he stuffed up against Ohio State that was really impressive.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, he was out there for most of that drive, and he had four plays that I was like happy to clip because he was beating up on Michael Jordan. That was a large portion of the reason that he had such a big negative in that game is Monet was crushing him. And he was doing the kind of things that I think we all expected Monet to do. He was pushing the pocket back, and he was disconnecting. He's not going to be a pass rusher.
Yeah, but if you single block that guy, the pocket's going to get pushed.
Right, yeah. So seeing that from him against the guy that he's going to go up against in the biggest game of the year, it was reassuring.
That's encouraging.
He's, you know, Michael Jordan's going to get better faster because he's a freshman, but I still think Monet is going to have a clear advantage in that matchup, and that was great to see.
Should also add that Monet's backup looked pretty decent in at least one clip we saw from this ball.
So you are, of course, referring to Aubrey Solomon.
I sure am.
Who gave Ben Bredesen the business in the Oklahoma drill.
He ripped him pretty hard.
He did.
Yeah.
And the other interesting part of the Oklahoma drill was when they had Monet out there, they had him matched up against Cesar Ruiz, who's probably 320 pounds. He's a true freshman, but a guy who was the most powerful offensive lineman in the country last year, and all they have him doing is blowing
just
that guy
back. Yeah.
And you hear like Madison clapping going like, that's right, that's what we want.
The running back was totally irrelevant in that part of the drill.
So he's going to be a space eater, the likes of which that Michigan hasn't seen since, Gabe Watson?
Yeah, yeah.
It's been a minute since.
It really has been a while.
They've been going with those Glasgow and Mike Martin types.
Those are fine too, but it's nice to have a planet out there that you can put in against power teams.
You have any ups and downs left, or?
Special teams is my last up. Just that the guys who were supposed to win the job have seemingly won those jobs, Quinn Nordine and Brad Robbins. It's the scholarship guys.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we saw Nordine's kick in the spring game. I'm still flying high off that.
There hasn't been any waiver there either with Nordine.
Exactly. And that's, like, the last thing you want to hear about kickers is, like, he was looking good one day and he wasn't the next. But with Nordine, it's been very consistent, like, he's got this job.
And we know that Michigan actually hired an analyst whose, like, sole job is the kicking game. And I think that's an uptick not only in Nordine, but also the two walk-ons who were challenging him.
Yeah.
Those guys both had field goals in the spring game that were not as impressive as Nordine's, but they looked very smooth. It was all systems go. And when I did the recruiting profile for Brad Robbins, the punter, I was like, this guy just seems okay. And then there's this video from the kicking camp where he's just booting
it. He is really booming them.
And they're timing it, and it's like 5 seconds, 5.2 seconds. And the whole camp is just watching him and going, whoa!
And this is a camp full of punters and kickers. So.
And long snappers. Easily impressed long snapper. So I feel better about the team as a whole after doing this preview process.
Yeah.
Because you feel Michigan has lost 10 starters on defense, 7 starters on offense, and how can they possibly endure all this? And then the things that the coaches have said and just kind of the shape of the depth chart or what it seems like as we go through fall camp, it seems like a team where almost everything is settled. Like,
yeah, which is remarkable given the amount of turnover, but they really do seem to have things set in place. We're really focusing on two positions
that
we're worried about. And in past years, it was a whole lot more than two.
It's like 2 out of 24, and maybe punt returner is like –
And even then, they have so many bodies to throw at it that you think that'll work out somehow.
So it's going to be a really interesting year because if they get the wrong injury, they could – like they had the Newsom injury last year, and I think that was
– The wrong injury.
That was the wrong injury. That's the injury that kept them from making the playoff.
Yeah.
And if they get the wrong injury this year, whether it's Cannell or
– Either of the inside linebackers.
I don't even want to say Gary, but
– Please don't.
Or Hurst, like there's going to be a big drop-off. So staying healthy is paramount. And then getting lucky with a couple of guys who are up-and-comers.
Yeah. And at least the good news is that at least right tackle, they have a few different bodies to throw at that position. Cornerback, a little bit less so.
None of those bodies make me feel good. Let's throw a true freshman out there. That doesn't make me feel good. Let's throw Juwan Bushel-Beatty out there. I'm not really feeling that one either. Runyon, like, it feels like...
Yeah, I mean, we're grasping at lottery tickets right now. And, the more the better there, at least.
Well, I mean, we'll talk about this when we talk about the schedule a little bit more, but this is a very low variance year where
it really, there are four games really where you can see Michigan at full strength being in a game. And other than that,
and they'll probably be in one more just because football is weird and terrible sometimes.
Yeah.
But
it is football.
Like the absolute bottom this season hits, like even if it's not going that well, is probably like 9-3 because they're probably going to be good enough to win against
one of those four tests.
Right, especially because like the first test is
becoming less of a test by the second.
Yes. I mean, has anyone gotten suspended since we started this podcast?
I should check. I still haven't written that preview because I don't know who's playing.
All right, we're going to take a break and we're going to come back and we're going to discuss the Shark Humpers.
Painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was it was a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, and MLS number 1161358.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
We are back, and we are going to talk about Florida. But first, we have a live read. This is a term of art in radio. If you listen to the roundtable, Sam does them very well. We're going to do this very poorly.
This is a very professional podcast.
Hopefully,
as the sign says.
Hopefully, Lantana Hummus will tolerate it. I was supposed to be eating this, but they just gave me an unopened thing with nothing.
No, the fingers, man.
I'm not going to eat hummus with my fingers on the
radio.
Around
a bunch of really expensive equipment.
But I bought this stuff before they became a sponsor. It's actually good. They've got like this like dill one that's crazy. It's like cucumber and dill. Oh, I got a spoon.
Oh, here we go.
Here we go. Spoons from Matt Demarest, everybody.
And now we get to eat hummus in front of a full room of people.
Just hummus. All right, we're gonna mix it up.
After you.
This is the edamame one.
It looks and smells
edamame good. Made with edamame and white beans and topped with toasted red pepper and toasted sesame seeds.
Now, the key is going to be not getting this on the microphone.
Yeah, let's not do that. It's good.
That is excellent.
It's a very visual podcast. Thank you.
Extremely visual podcast.
Well done. All right. We've now eaten hummus on the radio.
Yes, we have.
To satisfy our sponsors. Lantana Hummus is available at over 400 grocery stores nationwide, including Meijer, Bush's, and Kroger. Now, the Florida Gators.
What's left of them?
Such as they are. They have 10 people suspended.
As of now.
There were rumors that there were going to be a couple more today, but those have not come to fruition.
Yet.
But the guys who are suspended, only about three of them were going to be contributors, right?
Yeah. Now, two of them were their two best skill position players on offense, which is a huge problem for a team that's had a little bit of trouble moving the ball in the last couple years.
Yeah.
So losing Antonio Callaway is a huge blow to them because he was by far their best receiver last year. He was at 8.5 yards per target. You'd have to get down to their number six receiver before you have anybody else that even cracks seven.
And he's like a little 5'11 dynamo guy.
Yeah, he's like a slot bug plus in terms of like he could line up on the outside and go catch passes downfield, but his greater skill was definitely catching stuff underneath, doing the catch and run thing.
Like not the kind of guy I want to see in game one against a secondary that's one junior and two sophomores, three sophomores. Right?
He was going to be a worrisome matchup there. So not having that, I mean, he's the other thing about him is he's been in and out of trouble his whole career. So this wasn't the most shocking thing that this came to pass.
But no, but it sounds like that's
But it's a
big Florida trend.
It seems to be. And then their starting running back, Jordan Scarlett, who I've watched a fair amount of clips of him over the summer, which is now time that I've lit on fire. And I was really impressed by his ability because their offensive line has not been good. And his ability to just keep churning and grind out 5 yards.
He's like a kind of a Devion Smith kind of back, right?
Yeah, a little bit lower to the ground, but that same ability where, you know, he's not an open field runner necessarily, but he's somebody who will generate those 15, 20, 25-yard carries just by breaking a couple initial tackles.
See, that one doesn't really move the needle with me because that's not the kind of back that I'm afraid of with this.
That's true. And the guy who's stepping in, LaMichael Perrine, is he's more of a receiving threat.
Yeah.
And he's a little bit quicker. He doesn't have that tackle-breaking ability that Scarlett does, as best I can tell. But what they lose there – possibly more than just the loss of Scarlett himself is the depth, because Mark Thompson was their other rotation running back last year. He was not particularly impressive. And after that, it's true freshmen. And they're talented true freshmen, but they're still true freshmen.
So pass pickups might be kind of an issue.
It could be. Even Perrine, the guy who's starting, is only a sophomore. So, and he was mostly going out into routes when he was in on pass plays last year.
And the third guy is a defensive end who had like 27 tackles last year. He's a rotation guy.
Yeah, they'll be
fine at defensive end.
They've got some good players there and depth behind them. CeCe Jefferson is probably their best defender. Former 5-star, strong side defensive end who can play inside and out, even though he's pretty light for lining up on the interior.
Is he listed at 6'1", 242?
They do. I think that's a typo. I swear he's bigger than that. He's shown the ability to hold up inside. He'll be lining up more on the edge. They've got at least 3 defensive tackles that they can throw in there and feel pretty decent about. Depth after that gets a little iffy, but they can slide Jefferson inside on passing downs. Real obvious ones, at least. But they've also got a good pass emerging pass rusher in Jabari Zuniga on the other end. So they've got some guys who are going to test Michigan's tackles.
They always have good names.
They do.
Florida is always just loaded with, especially on defense, just guys who were named.
Yeah,
well.
Jeremiah Moon is stepping in as strong side linebacker because of an injury. That's a pretty strong name.
And they just decided on their starting quarterback, Felipe Franks, who's a top 100 guy who's kind of entered college with a Shane Morris kind of reputation. Big arm, raw as heck.
Yeah. Someone sent me a screen cap from his first spring game, which I mistakenly thought was from this year's spring game, in which he apparently threw 3 interceptions on his first 4 attempts. Might have been a little Shane Morris trying to throw the ball through linebackers type of thing there. He was far less turnover. He didn't throw a pick in this spring game, and he had some impressive throws, but he doesn't have a cannon, and he has some...
I thought that was like his main aspect.
He's got a stronger arm than Luke Del Rio, but okay. That's not a great starting point.
Okay.
I thought he was floating some of his throws from the spring game. Maybe he was just trying to put touch on him.
Yeah.
But he also kind of was trying to guide some throws and missed some relatively easy ones. So I think there's going to be a chance for Michigan to get a turnover or two because that situation is very unsettled, especially since they have not ruled out that they'll play both other quarterbacks as well.
Yeah, they have
– which is weird because I don't know what Luke Del Rio brings to the table,
no.
To be honest.
And Malik Zerer is a guy who's mobile, and they'd have a package for that. But just how deep this quarterback competition went, I think would give Florida fans pause because, Del Rio was really terrible last year.
He was bad. I mean, they were really trying to give Austin Appleby the job instead of him, and they were just kind of passing it back and forth. My guess is I would assume they really wanted Zaire to win that job.
Yeah. But he did the Rudock thing where he showed up in fall camp and he's trying to win a quarterback job.
And some of the word leaking out from Florida insiders is that he has not mastered the playbook yet.
So, right, as you'd expect.
They'll probably have him as a situational guy, but it is going to make it more obvious what they're trying to do when he goes in there.
I mean, Franks is a guy who might be a dude down the road, but if he gets sped up by Michigan's pass rush, he starts panicking, throws some – interceptable balls. I mean, I think what's the over-under for Frank's turnovers in this game?
I'd put it at 1.5, considering he's probably going to throw a pick, and I wouldn't be surprised if they get a sack fumble in there somewhere because Florida's line has turned over a little bit, and then also apparently their left tackle and easily their best lineman, Martez Ivy, their scout insider mentioned that he's been dinged up. He missed 10 days of spring ball. He missed some days in fall camp, and they're saying he'll certainly start, but that he'll be playing at around 80%. And playing at 80% as the best lineman going up against this defensive line.
Yeah, that's Rashawn
Gary
coming at you.
Seems like a recipe for disaster for those guys.
Yeah.
And they're not super experienced on the rest of the line either. So,
I mean,
they've got size. That's the one thing they have in spades. But other than that, especially given what Don Brown is going to throw at them, where you've got an inexperienced offensive line, a new center, a new quarterback, are they going to be picking up everything that Don Brown throws at them? I'd be surprised.
I mean, this is a situation where I can't imagine like a worse defensive coordinator to go up against in game one.
Yeah, it is not ideal as a first-year guy, and especially since you know, we've seen how Doug Nussmeier operates. He's not the most creative, I would say, of offensive coordinators.
I mean, we had the 1 year.
We've also seen him at other stops where, like, other than Alabama, where he had a ton of talent and didn't have to – they added variety to that offense after he left. They spread it out a lot more post Nussmeier. I get McElwain and Nussmeier mixed sometimes.
Well,
they're both unremarkable OCs who passed through Alabama.
We don't talk about the shark thing, though.
We haven't. Like, we have strong feelings about it.
I have unbelievably passionate feelings about this. If you don't know what happened, there was a picture of a man sort of...
You might see this picture tomorrow.
He's a jolly man, and he was lying on top of a dead shark in a boat.
The man happens to be naked.
And
that was an important part of this.
It kind of looked like Jim McElwain, and it kind of looked like the guy who owns Jimmy John's. And so the internet was like going, ha, 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 this looked... But nobody really thought it was Jim McElwain, and then
he took it so seriously.
Like three times this fall, he's been asked about it, and he just gets like, "Oh, this hurt our program. This hurt our family. It hurt everything about me. I don't know what that's."
That was George W. Bush.
I don't know. Yeah,
Florida.
I don't know
coach.
What that is. I am the worst accent person in the world.
This is why I don't even try.
And like he just took it so seriously, and he was so upset about it. And I was like, I lowered my opinion of him an insane amount. Like I was like, well, maybe this guy's going
to
make it.
And because the smart thing would have been to laugh at it and be like, yeah, that guy does kind of look like me. That is clearly not me.
Yeah,
and then move on. And instead he really took it seriously.
and I was just like, okay, maybe he'll make it. I don't know. And now it's like, no, they're going to go like 7-5 this year and he's going to get fired. Maybe he'll get one more year, but like, I just can't imagine that being a successful football coach.
I'm having a hard time imagining that too.
There was a rumor. I'm not saying that this is that true, but there was a rumor that he like employed like an SEO company to like try to scrub this non-information.
Does he not know that is impossible?
I
really hope he did try that.
So like, I feel so much better about this game because of the shark thing.
It's a bizarre intangible to throw
it
in there.
It is.
But I'm with you.
And you know there's going to be like some Michigan students at the game, and one of them's going to be dressed up as like Left Shark.
Holding up a Miss You sign. Call me.
And like he's going to see it, and he's going to get so angry he's going to forget about play.
He's going to get flustered. They need like someone wandering around with a tuba playing the Jaws theme from different angles in the stadium. Just to see if he'll like whip around while the play's going on.
Oh my god!
I so wish this game was at Michigan Stadium because like what the student section could do with this. Oh, it's killing me.
I mean, you know that whenever they go on the road in the SEC, like the bands are just going to do the Jaws theme, like the whole time.
The whole time, yeah. He asked for it and he's going
to
get it.
I mean, like now I think he's going to get fired, but I don't want him to get fired because this is just going to be like a hilarious running joke for the duration of his career.
Yeah, it really is.
Don't get mad on the internet. He got mad on the internet.
It's the worst thing to do online.
Do we have any like serious things about Florida left? Are we worried about something? Like their Tyree Cleveland guy? He's supposed to be pretty good.
He scored like a 97-yard touchdown against LSU where he beat a guy on a fly route and then shook off the tackle attempt, and that was pretty impressive. I think he only had 13 other catches last year, and it was at a 50% catch rate. So,
you know, freshman.
True freshman, deep threat, so definitely a boomer bust guy.
He's been getting, like, a ton of hype.
They are hyping up. I mean, he's an athlete.
They just found the shark picture, a very visual podcast.
Okay, here we go. There it is.
That's
You're going to see a cropped version of that in the preview tomorrow.
For all of you at home, just envision it. It's really wonderful.
So they do still have some talent at receiver to the point where Michigan's corners will get tested. Freddie Swain's an interesting option. They've got, I think their starting slot is not actually going to be their starting slot. Okay. It was the guy who started last year. He was very inefficient. He's only 5'8", but they've got...
5'8"?
Yeah, 5'8". He is like Martavius Odom's size. But they get back Dre Massey, who was getting a ton of hype heading into the season last year and then got hurt. And a true freshman, Kadarius Toney, who they were actually playing a little bit at quarterback in the spring, kind of with whatever package they'll use for Zaire. He's a really impressive open field athlete, but how much he's gotten down the offensive wide receiver is probably a pretty big question at this point.
And then the other thing you mentioned is that their back seven is pretty inexperienced, right?
Yeah, I mean, they've lost a lot of guys to the NFL from that secondary over the past two seasons, so their number one corner was their nickel last year, and Duke Dawson was pretty good in that role, but, you know, it's a big transition to slide over to number one. And then their other starting corner, who's also their starting nickel, is Marco Wilson, who is a true freshman and the younger brother of one of their graduated corners. So while he'll look the same, the experience drops off pretty significantly there.
He's listed at like 170 pounds.
Yeah.
It's kind of like if Michigan was starting Ambry Thomas.
Yeah. So you're looking at that, and like, I'd also be worried for them in that he beat out a senior for that spot. I think they probably have preferred for the senior to win that job on the outside. Instead, he's going to be a guy who's inserted when they go to the nickel and Wilson will slide inside. And everybody else is our freshman at corner. So,
okay.
Safety, they're a little bit steadier. Nick Washington's a redshirt senior.
Well, they lost one of their projected starters.
Yeah, Marco Harris was jinxed by the HDTV preview, apparently. Marcel Harris, he tore his Achilles. So that's
and they had to like move a nickel back to safety.
So Chauncey Gardner was a guy who they were looking at. I had him projected as their top corner.
Okay,
and now he's starting at safety for them. So he's a good player, but moving positions, and it's something that's done out of necessity instead of out of getting your best five out there initially.
All right, so how I mean, what give me a prediction? What's going on?
I think Michigan's going to win and cover. I mean, I feel and that's with the line moving a point or two since the suspensions
like
started trickling out.
Now, yeah.
I was already confident about this matchup, even with both teams at full strength.
Yeah.
Just because of the coaching matchup, if nothing else.
Well, I feel like Michigan, everybody's underestimating Michigan because it's like, oh, they lost all these starters.
Yeah, they're looking at numbers on Phil Sheets' chart.
You know, they don't realize that, okay, yeah, they lost four starters on the defensive line, but look at that defensive line.
Yeah, it's four more starters. Let's be real. So, and also, I mean, the things that you're worried about with Michigan, namely, like, an opposing team with a great passing game coming in and picking on inexperienced corners.
Yeah, yeah.
Florida does not appear to be in position to do that.
Okay.
They're probably going to have to try because they also are a little banged up front and lost their best running back.
Well, but once you start doing that, then it's like, can you pass protect?
Yeah, so Michigan should be able to pin their ears back a little bit against this line, and... Yeah, I don't see Florida being able to move the ball consistently enough and avoid turnovers to the level that they're going to need to keep up.
All right, give me a score.
Let's go 34-20.
34-20, two touchdowns.
Yeah.
I said 75-2 on TK this morning.
I like it.
A little bit optimistic, but all right, we're going to take one more break. We're going to come back, and we're going to have a gimmicky top five that may be one for the ages.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Everyone has their own definition of true wealth, and it's our job to help them understand what the definition is for them. We look at everything from college to retirement and lifestyle planning, as far as estate planning and building their own legacy, helping them understand what their goals are, and then backing in from there.
Peak Wealth Management founder Nick Hopwood has been a part of the MGO blog community from almost the very beginning. If you've put in the work to reach that point in your career, it's probably time to talk to him about your financial future. Stop by his office in Plymouth or visit peakwm.com/mgoblog.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen in every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
All right, Gimmicky Top 5 time. Our Gimmicky Top 5 is we were asked to come up with some prospecting names because Ace was like, let's do it.
Yep.
And Ben Mason, of course, spurred this because he has this headshot.
Oh, my God, the headshot.
Where he looks like the crazy guy in the posse who's just there for the murder.
Yeah, he's there to kill
and
for nothing else.
It was wonderful because, of course, Henry Poggi is Old Bandit, and now he looks suave and sophisticated.
Yeah,
and
it's disappointingly suave.
And he's about to murder somebody who, I don't know, a raccoon? Yeah, he's not about to kill and eat a raccoon.
Or, like, strangle a man who talks shit about the Big Lebowski.
So, yes, Old Bandit is RIP, and we need more prospecting names.
We do.
Ace, you're number 5.
So we've had trouble coming up with a nickname for Jamarc Woods because
yes.
The one that was suggested was so disappointing it was actually his last name. So
yes.
Jamarc Woods is now Old Jamarc Woods.
That is also my number 5.
great minds. Great minds.
I think I should say it because then that's the Pert Hapley thing again.
Yes.
Old Jamarc Woods is his nickname because that's just his name. Sponsor, how are you doing? His mic's not on. That's not great.
Hello.
Now it's on. There we go.
Now it's on. How are you?
I'm doing well. You guys sprung this top 5 on me in the last minute, and
I'm
just not good at old prospector names. I'm
going
to be honest. That's not in my wheelhouse. If you want to, save money on a refinance or get a low rate on a purchase, I'm your guy. But prospector names are not my thing.
Okay, but you do, even if they're lame, you do have a list.
I don't have a list. What I'm going to do is I'm going to moderate your list.
I think
we're going to add a new thing where I'm going to say that's just not a good name, or I'm going to say that you guys did a great job. I'll comment on you. So the first one, you guys started out hot. That was a good one. I like it. So I'm gonna give you 2 thumbs up on the first.
You pay us money, so we have to endure this.
Yeah, you can't.
Sure,
you have no choice.
Well, this is not
money and beer.
This is not how I envisioned my life turning out.
Dance, Brian. Dance.
All right. Ace, you're number 4.
Omori Samuels. He's a man who, when you see the picture, you kind of know that he needs a nickname. So I'm calling him Old Thunderlegs.
Old Thunderlegs. I did call him the Versailles of thighs when I.
Yeah.
When I
was. That might be a little bit better than Old Thunderlegs, to be honest.
Really, come on,
that rolls off the tongue pretty well.
Old Thunderlegs is good. Well, come on, rate him. Go.
Old Thunder Thighs? Is that what it was?
Old Thunder Legs.
Old Thunder Thighs.
Old Thunder Thighs.
1 to 10. Give that a ranking.
6.
6.
Fair.
Okay, my number 4 is Ol Ol Ole O, which is Kyle Kalis. Because he's an OL who's
you had to get
OLA
a
blocks.
Shot in at him for just whiffing assignments.
I watched a lot of his own stretches where he didn't block guys. It's not a nice one. I'm sorry.
It looks better in print than it does rolling off the tongue.
All right, give me a rating.
4.5.
4.5.
Coming out on top.
All right, 1-0 Ace. All right, you guys tied the first time.
Yeah, we had the same one.
Ace number 3.
Donovan Jeter, who had some quotes about Notre Dame when he changed his commitment to Michigan. So. old shade thrower for Donovan Jeter, which, you know, he was throwing some shade.
All right. I've said my opinion. What's yours?
That's a reach. I'm going to go. I'm going to give it a four. I'm going to give that one.
I don't actually have a person for this one, but I just
cheating.
I just like it so much. All right, it's a Jalen Kelly Powell, and he's old Hamburglar, because he's like burgling.
This gets a one.
He's burgling
this
the hams in the slot. It
sounds like a McDonald's
character. He's like Honey Badger.
This isn't a prospector. This is a dude in a freaking Happy Meal.
Oh, Hamburglar. He's old burgling the hams.
I'm going to give it a five because Ace is trying to be the judge right now. He's not the judge.
So I overstepped my bounds.
Yep. Victory.
That's a five, so 1-1.
We're not scoring very well.
No, we're not.
Ace.
I'm hoping this will redeem myself.
Ace, you're number two.
Because I thought, you know, prospected names, we have stuck with the old whatever format. Yeah. But
are you breaking
the
format?
You can switch it up a little bit.
Oh,
so
no.
Chris Evans is Kid Whistleneck.
Oh, that's a
because he's
point.
Walking around with a whistle all the time. He's got the kid in play hair. He's young.
Yeah.
So Kid Whistleneck. You got to have a kid in the posse.
Yeah, yeah. Well, all right.
I think he's actually Kid McSpectacles.
You can't have a mix.
Because he's Kid Spectacles then. He's got his glasses on in those pictures, man.
That's true.
I wonder if he wears contacts because he doesn't have rec specs
Now you are getting outside the bounds of your defined.
You can't tell the judge what to do.
He's still paying the bills.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
I'll put a stop payment on that check. You watch.
This is not for public consumption. Well, you haven't actually judged
the
MGO
podcast
judge.
Gets held hostage.
I think Ace, that's pretty good. I'm going to go seven.
You. All right. So this is Dave Brandon's.
That would come up.
He's old J. Ira and Nikki Harris family.
That's a good one.
The J. Ira and Nikki Harris family foundation.
No, he's just the J. That's what he is.
That's a tie. That's a draw. That's a draw. We're going 1-1.
Oh, so this is the tiebreaker. Yeah.
I'm cheating a little bit on my number one because I offered it last night.
Well, he hasn't heard it. He hasn't heard it.
So we were chatting about the picture of Ben Mason, his team photo this year. He's got like the evil pointy mustache thing going.
It's wonderful.
His eyes are a little bit uneven. He's got like a wrestling ear poking out. His tie is askew. He just looks like he just walked in from a street fight, but like a very dapper street fight.
Yeah, like it's 1880, it's old West.
Like Peaky Blinders almost?
Yes.
British. Yeah, like Gangs of New York, something like that. So I offered Old Murderface as his nickname. Also, this is not a prospector name, but after looking at that picture more, I think Thick Dick Dastardly could also be his nickname.
What?
Because he looks like Dick Dastardly, but just wider.
I don't know who that is.
He's the cartoon guy with the evil pencil mustache.
Yeah.
Okay. It's Dick Dastardly.
Okay.
Yeah.
But old murder face.
Maybe introduce Dick Dastardly before you bring that name.
Yeah, because
starting with Thick was, you know, a bit porny.
I was a little bit like, what? Like, the third word was very important there.
It really was.
I'm going to go 7.5. There was a lot of thought put into that one. That was pretty good.
All right, this one is Wilton Spate. Because he is a tree man. He's old Groot.
Okay.
And I was upset because he lost like 23 pounds, but apparently he didn't.
He's less Groot-like.
He's like lost maybe 5 pounds on the roster.
Okay.
So apparently that was fictional, as most roster things are. But like his ability to be a tree who you try to tackle him and he's like, I am Groot, throw ball.
7.51.
Oh!
Look at that. Eighth of 7.625. We're going to go with eighth of percent since it's a mortgage company. So 7.625, Brian wins. Just
All right. Now I like this.
Yeah.
I don't like it anymore. It stopped being fun.
It stopped being fun entirely?
Well, you know.
No.
Somebody get these guys a beer. They said it's not fun
right
now.
It's getting more fun.
More.
We can't drink and talk at the same time. That's not like, I don't know how many throats I'm supposed to have.
Yeah, I can't, like, circular breathe
while
drinking.
This is not good with your other nickname for... Anyway, that's definitely the end of the segment, isn't it? Yes. We're going to come back. We're going to take an overall look at Michigan's schedule, and we are going to predict season records.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go. HomeSure Lending. Both fair and honest, HomeSure Lending is local, efficient, and small enough so you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hey, this is Matt Demarest. I'm the owner of HomeSure Lending. We're a small, local, family-owned business, and so I'm here with a couple of members of my family, Cooper and Colby, my boys. Cooper, how old are you, buddy?
9.
Colby, what about you?
7.
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
We're a family business here in Ann Arbor. I'd love to serve you and your family with any of your mortgage needs.
Located at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HomeSureLending. You can reach Matt at 734-531-9950. HomeSure Lending, NMLS 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
We are back for a schedule overview. Mm-hmm. Ace has been tasked with ordering Michigan's opponents from the easiest to conquer to the least easiest. I think there's a different word for that.
Yeah, you know.
But I'm very tired. I mentioned this at the top. I can't believe I'm conscious.
You've written some words this week.
Ace, you're number 12.
Cincinnati, which
Cincinnati
is a bit of an upset at number 12.
Oh my God.
I think we expected a certain team there. But Cincinnati is in the position of being a mediocre team from a pretty mediocre at best conference that is turning over a coaching staff after a period where their recruiting tailed off under Tommy Tuberville. It is Luke Fickell's first head coaching job. His coordinator hires were relatively uninspiring, and the team loses a decent amount, too. So there wasn't a ton of talent there to begin with. There's going to be a dip this year.
Really?
They're learning new systems, and the coordinators. One was a guy who was calling plays under Brian Kelly, which is kind of like you're not really in charge of your thing.
Yeah.
And the other has, I think, spent 1 year as a linebackers coach and was previously a grad assistant. It's Marcus Freeman, who was an Ohio State linebacker not very long ago.
Oh, yeah.
So
they're recruiting well, though, but that's not going to help them this
year. Yeah, it's not going to help them this year. They will be better before long because they are stealing the dudes Michigan State would normally get, which we enjoy. But for right now, they're worse than Rutgers.
Ace! You're number 11.
Rutgers. Okay. I mean, they're bad. Let's be real. They've got...
Is there any hope that they can be, like, competitive against anybody?
I mean, they've got a decent secondary. I like their corners a little bit.
They lost 49-0 to Michigan State last year.
They did. I mean, they're really bad, but they do bring back a fair amount. And that was year one under Chris Ash, so you do expect at least some step forward in terms of just comfort within the system.
Especially this is still since like I'm, a... 3-9.
Yeah, this is still a really crappy team.
Ace, number 10.
Purdue, which Purdue gets the edge over Rutgers because that game is away. But
okay.
Other than that, I mean,
I mean, they do have David Blau,
who is supposed to be like kind of the rock of their team. He hasn't actually won that quarterback competition
really?
Yet. I mean, I know new coach. It might just be, you know, a.
I do like their
motivational
like
thing.
They hired like a very Purdue coach.
Yeah, in terms of like compared to where teams were expected to hire guys, like I think they had the best hire of any Big Ten team last year, getting Brohm. Like that's what Purdue should always be doing, getting a guy running a ridiculous offense and like get the personnel to match and go with it. But it's going to be a rocky transition this year.
Because Daryl Hazel was a complete nonentity everywhere.
He was bad, and including in recruiting, so the talent is just not there right now.
Ace number 9.
Air Force, which brings back way less than the three teams below them. But basically they have nothing coming back except their quarterback and their running back, who are both good, but there's nothing coming back except the system.
Okay, but
gets them at ninth is the system.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they'd be dead last year. Bring back almost nothing.
Michigan almost lost to them last time.
They did. Now, different coaching staff, markedly different times. And I think Don Brown is going to have some things drawn up. Michigan is not going to play a safety in the parking lot against Air Force this time around. This is a game where they rank this high because they might put together one or two frustrating touchdown drives, which separates them from the bottom three teams on this list.
All right. I'm more scared of them than a lot of people.
The next team on this list, possibly?
Hastie number 8.
Michigan State.
Who has plummeted.
They would have been second or third on this list last year.
What a great thing to say.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, I mean, we all know that Michigan State went through the offseason from hell after the season from hell.
Both of their starting Ds on their depth chart are walk-ons.
Yeah. Their second corner is either going to be like a guy who did nothing in that defensive backfield last year or like a 5'10", no-star true freshman. So, I mean, the safeties are the guys who were packing up last year's safeties, and then when they came in, they were just as bad. And those safeties were as bad as I've ever seen a safety duo be. And as a Michigan fan, that is saying something.
And it kind of feels like they've got figured out, like the Narduzzi defense has been, like he's not doing it at Pitt. Like it's kind of been downloaded at Michigan State as well.
Yeah, and they're still kind of playing out the string with that, and it's not working. And then on offense, I mean, they lost a chunk of their receiving core, both because Corley was booted from the team and then they needed Justin Lane as their number one cornerback. So they have lost some talent there. They're just going to give the ball to L.J. Scott as many times as he can handle it, and then when he can't handle it, they'll give it to Gerald Holmes.
Their starting left tackle weighs how many pounds?
284, and he's 6'8". Rashawn Gary is going to be picking Cole Chewins out of his teeth. I don't think they're going to have any ability to block Michigan's defensive line. It's going to feel a lot like last year, except the score is going to be a lot. The gap's going to be wider there because there isn't going to be like the chance that Michigan State can save face.
What's their record this year?
I think they get to 4 wins.
4,
and that,
four. Wow, that's
The Big Ten East has some body bag games, and I think Lewerke shows enough promise, and they have
no. 4 is like low. I was thinking more.
Oh, okay. Yeah. In that case, I thought you were maybe thinking.
No.
And I was like, they're bad, man. They're bad, but.
Do they still have Notre Dame?
When I'm trying to think, yeah.
Oh, okay.
They do. Both looking at their schedule, looking at the team, it's just like they could gel and come together and be something, or it could still just be a disaster. Like,
is that it for D'Antonio, 4-8?
I would think so. I mean, given all the off-field stuff, if he has two straight seasons where they, like, don't come close to a bowl.
I think he might walk away. I don't think he would.
Yeah, I don't know if he'd get, like, they would give him the chance to resign and save some face, but.
Ace number 7.
Minnesota. They
have some pieces.
They're in an interesting transition period going from, you know, man ball Minnesota, kind of the vestiges of the Jerry Kill era. To P.J. Fleck, who runs a completely different spread system. So it's going to be kind of an awkward fit in the beginning, but they have two good running backs.
Yeah.
They get their best – they get their, like, a all-Big Ten level tight end back in Brandon Lingan.
They have a defensive tackle named Richter.
Their defense was good last year, and their front seven, I like Richardson a lot. They've got another tackle who's pretty good. I like their linebackers quite a lot. The question is whether they can replace. They've lost some pretty high-level talent in the secondary, a few guys off to the NFL over the last couple years, and we'll see whether they can keep that going without
some drop-off. And
somebody has
to play quarterback.
Yes, and the guys playing quarterback are the guys who backed up Mitch Leidner the past 2 years, and that's not great.
H number six.
Maryland.
Maryland got some dudes.
They do. It's a weirdly weak schedule. They have two very good running backs who are perfect for the system that they put in place, but the system that they put in place was basically, let's try to make our offensive line irrelevant because they're really bad.
I remember Mike McCray just chasing guys all over the field and getting slowly better at it as the game went on.
Yeah, he just got to practice defending outside runs throughout that game. I don't expect them to have much of an interior running game. I had the expectation that their passing game would take a step forward because they brought in a four-star transfer in Caleb Henderson, who came from North Carolina, where he had a very viable reason to transfer, which was Mitchell Trubisky was there.
Yeah.
But Tyrell Piggy Pigrome has won that job coming out of the fall.
Wait, Piggy?
Piggy has won that job. Henderson isn't even on the depth chart right now. And that's really bad for them. Piggy was awful last year. They brought him in situationally, and he didn't even provide much of a run threat, and he was no threat to throw the ball. So I think it's going to be another year for them where they're kind of scheming around their own personnel, but they do have some interesting players on defense, a couple of good defensive linemen, Kingsley Opara, Jesse Anibanam.
Anibanam.
I'm taking a random-ass shot at that
no,
one.
No, I mean, I assume that you're correct, because that's not how it was in my head.
They've got a good linebacker in Jermaine Carter.
Yeah.
They've got a terrible linebacker next to him who ruined his year last year in Shane Cockerell, so hopefully they figured something else out there, or not, for our purposes.
But they could be like a 6-6, 7-5 type.
Yeah, and they've still got some like random four stars hanging around who are like stepping into starting jobs, so they could be an interesting team, and Michigan does play them on the road, so that might be...
H number five.
Trap game, I guess. Number five is another trappish game at Indiana.
I mean, this isn't like Indiana, though.
It's not, though. I mean, they will be taking the Kevin Wilson spread and running it through the Al Borges, or the Mike DeBoard brain. And
Same thing.
It's not good. It's going to be depressing, I think, to watch their offense just devolve.
I mean, I think it'll happen more next year. Like, it's always like a one-year period, and then it goes off.
And kind of just like, hey, like, save as much of the playbook as you can kind of a thing for this year. And they will. It's weird to say about an Indiana team, but they will be able to lean on their defense. I was actually pretty close to putting their secondary above Ohio State's in my position group rankings, but couldn't bring myself to pull the trigger on that because they're still Indiana.
Yeah.
And Ohio State does have a lot of talent, even if they lost a lot of talent last year. But Tom Allen did an incredible job of turning that defense around in 2 years. And he's the head coach now, so the defense should still be pretty decent. They've got Tigre Scales, who's potentially an All-American linebacker if he takes another step forward from where he was at last year.
H number four.
Florida. Bringing up the rear now of the, like, four tough games because of all the suspensions. I mean, we've talked about them fair enough already.
H number three.
I'm pretty confident. At Wisconsin, they're a weird team because
they are
like the clear-cut best team in the Big Ten West. Their schedule sets up where they should be able to win that division with relative ease as long as they don't lose some games they shouldn't. But at the same time, they lost. Like, the expectation is kind of that they're going to keep this linebacker just factory going, but they've lost a lot from there. They've suffered two more pretty key injuries this fall, including to Jack Kishi, who was their best player last year for large stretches. And then turn around on offense and, well, first of all, on defense, they've lost two great defensive coordinators recently, and this time...
Yeah, that's a good point.
And now they promoted Jim Leonard, who was a walk-on safety at Wisconsin, but he's had 1 year as a defensive backs coach, and other than that, he was a grad assistant.
Like, yeah,
he is as green gets for a coordinator at this level. And so it's going to be interesting to see how much of a drop there is there. And they're going to need to lean on that defense because they don't have Bart Houston anymore at quarterback. Alex Hornibrook was definitely the less impressive of the two.
Popgun arm.
In that platoon. And, yeah, like, his issue doesn't seem to be something that's going to get fixed necessarily with a year of experience. His arm is just not very strong. And they lost their top two backs. Their line, they lost starting left tackle, an NFL-level guy. And it's just tough to see how they're going to move the ball consistently against Michigan's defense. So, like, that game is scary because it's in Camp Randall late in the season.
Yeah.
It does give their offense a little bit of time to gel, and it gives Jim Leonard some time to get used to being coordinator.
They need to find some offensive linemen.
Yeah, it's been weird. Under Paul Chris, I keep expecting them to move forward and be the Wisconsin we're used to seeing. And it just hasn't happened. I mean, Corey Clement had a really hard time finding room to run last year, and they lost their best offensive lineman.
Ace number two.
Penn State. I mean, they're an explosive offense that is high variance probably. We'll see how that works out without Chris Godwin, but they have Saquon Barkley. They have Trace McSorley. That line has been consistently getting better, and they brought in Matt Linegrover, Minnesota's old offensive line coach,
yeah,
who did a very good job there.
I mean, aren't they still like starting like 6'3", 6'4", guys at tackle?
They did kick Brendan Mahan inside,
okay,
so they have actually moved one of their guard-sized tackles back to guard. But, I mean, for them, they have an explosive offense. The key for their defense is going to be whether they can kind of get through the season-ending injury to their top corner, John Reed, who could play nickel, which was big for them, and was a sure tackler. And then also they've turned over their linebacker core. They did get a lot of practice last year because that turnover happened with injuries pretty early. But losing Brandon Bell is a big deal. And we'll see. And they've also lost their best pass rushers.
Yeah, so what does defensive line look like?
Turning over their defensive ends, and there's not a lot of experience there. They have two very solid returning starting tackles, the Cothrans, who
right,
spell their name one letter differently, and it's remarkably confusing because one's like a burly run stuffer and the other's more of like a penetrating pass rusher. And I really like their third DT, Kevin Givens, who was grading out at like near Mo Hurst levels of pass rush productivity on limited snaps, but he's a guy who they can – he's only like 280, so they bring him in situationally, but as a pass rusher, he's quite good.
Ace, your number one is obvious.
It's Ohio State. Yeah. They're good. I mean,
they are good.
They're good. They got JT Barrett.
They got
have
some
five
guys.
Stars in everywhere.
Yeah.
It's annoying.
So, what does this season feel like to you?
It feels like 10-2 to me.
Okay.
It feels like, I hate to say, a loss to Ohio State and then a loss to one of those other three teams, maybe.
Let's leave that at 60-40. And
yeah.
Like,
okay. Yeah. Like the odd shakeout where they're going to lose to maybe two of those top four teams and just, the depth issues are such on defense where I'm worried that if they do happen to suffer an injury somewhere else, that opens up the middle part of the schedule as maybe more of an upset chance there.
So I saw a set of lines for Michigan's season that had them as two touchdown favorites in every game except the four like top games.
Yeah.
And like I feel real good about Florida.
Yeah.
Like, and I feel like they can get two of those, but like I'm really kind of on the edge of like, I mean, it should be 10-2. Like that's like the thing that makes the most sense. But I do feel like, depending on the injury situation, that 11-1 is more likely than 9-3, and that's kind of a bold statement, I think. But if you just look at the schedule, it's like
that's not bold if they stay healthy throughout the season. And that the bold thing is predicting that they'll stay fully healthy throughout the season.
And then they might lose to Ohio State by 1 inch, and people will be like, Jim Harbaugh's overrated.
Mm-hmm.
So enjoy that next year, guys.
The rivals will run a whole round table. It'll be beautiful.
All right, we are out. We will see you next time. Thank you for coming, everybody who showed up. We're actually going to be here watching the Ohio State-Indiana game until that becomes an Indiana blowout and we all go home.
Mm-hmm.
So stop by. We got beer, we got food, and go Blue. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Underground Printing, The Bow Store, Homeshore Lending, The Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Lantana Hummus, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Peak Wealth Management, and Michigan Law Grad.
it better than